The Wellstone, a novel by Will McCarthy. Recording copyright 2002 by Will McCarthy. This novel, read to you by the MAPI41 speech synthesizer, may be distributed freely. The Wellstone, ISBN 0553584464, was published by Bantam Books in 2003, and is available in paperback form wherever fine books are sold. Chapter 1-5. Pride and the Prince. As the time for magnetic braking approached, the remaining preparations were remarkably straightforward. A bit of research, a bit of simulation, and a bit of full democratic discussion with the remaining crew. When everyone understood the magnetic braking plan, and had slept on it and then given their explicit agreement, Pascal announced that the differences of opinion that had separated the Arades crew were officially reconciled. He proclaimed a group hug. Conrad wasn't too crazy about hugging Steve, and especially Ho. But for the good of the revolution, such as it was, he endured it, and then, really, there was nothing left to do. Having agreed to consign themselves to the facts anyway, there was no reason to suffer the additional boredom of 11 more sailing days. So they dug the spacesuits out of their trunk and started putting them on. Paper doll jumpsuits of translucent, beetle black Wellstone film, better in fact our sleeping beauties, Shmari observed, jiggling her way through the dressing process. They need to suit up as well. Nobody really knew what would happen on the approach or final impact, whether the cabin would break apart, whether its Wellstone wrapping would spring any leaks, or what. Either way, once they were magnetically docked to the barges, hell, they'd be opening the wrapper anyway, so they could get free and find an airlock that would lead them inside. That was the plan, anyway. The spacesuits were really just human-shaped balloons, and while their interior surfaces had been programmed to absorb carbon dioxide, Conrad and Pascal had never figured out how to crack it back into oxygen again. So they would have something like 15 minutes to get into the barge before they suffocated to death, like everything on this trip. It was a gamble. The sleeping beauties may not agree to this, Conrad replied. We should give them the option of remaining in storage, for safekeeping. Well, Shmari pointed out, to ask them that, we're still going to have to wake them up. True. Conrad approached the fax machine, and queried it. Do you have sufficient buffer mass to recreate the people in storage? Yes, the fax replied, in that weird, stupid voice it had. Good. Good. With a glance at Pascal, he continued, would you please print a copy of Raul Sanchez? Minus the lung injuries, we might as well get started. My data buffer does not contain a pattern called Raul Sanchez, the fax replied. And that couldn't be right, because poor Raul's name and personal data should be appended to his genome, right there in every cell of his body. The first person you absorbed, stored, whatever. First, the fax said, I have no record indexed in that manner. I have stored 11,422 persons. Conrad rolled his eyes. Not the first one ever. The first one on this voyage. I have no records indexed in that manner. It was about 5 weeks ago. My buffer contains 4 personnel records from that period. None of them is named Raul Sanchez, 4 records. Conrad felt a sudden chill. What records are they? What names? James Grover shot at, the fax replied. Bertram Wayne, Canalas name, Emilio Brithwaite Roberts. That's all. I have 2 other personnel records available. Preston Midrand and J. Milgazinaga. Yes. Oh, shit, Pascal said. It's a FIFO buffer, Conrad turned. A what? First in/first out, Pascal replied angrily. Its memory isn't infinite, it's just supposed to store the pattern long enough to forward it to the NESCOG, along with a destination address. As new data gets added, the oldest patterns are deleted to make space. God damn it. I knew that. I wasn't thinking. Frankly, I'm surprised it can hold even 6 people. That's a lot of data. So Raul is dead? Carl wanted to know. This Raul is, yeah, Pascal snapped. Completely, irretrievably, even a dead body can be scanned for memories. Hell, a skeleton can be scanned for residual fields if you've got the time and money, and even the place where someone stood can be mined for ghosts. But there's no stone or metal here to support a haunting. I think Raul's pattern is about as gone as a pattern can get. At these words, Conrad felt a sick, sinking feeling. They had finally managed to get someone killed. The risk had been there all along, but now it was a fact. Pascal's fact, mostly, but the rest of them, Conrad included, had helped make it happen. We killed him, he said. Oh, God, it's over. We've got to send a distress signal now. On the contrary, Pascal replied coolly. This changes nothing, but Conrad was having none of that. Because, if we climb in the facts, we'll be killing the others, all 6 of them. Hell, shit, there are seven of us here right now. He pointed, ticking the names off on his fingers. You, me, Shmari, Carl, Martin, Ho, and Steve. That's seven. One of us will die, too. The civilized thing, Pascal said, would be to draw straws. Six long, one short. No, B.A.'s, the civilized thing would be to pull those boys out of there and call the Navy for help. Pascal slapped a fist in his hand three times. No, no and no. That would be the pointless thing. How many times do we have to go over this? The bodies on Thisvatula are expendable. It's our real lives that matter. You can't just kill them, Shmari said, drifting nearer to the prince, looming weightlessly over him. You haven't even asked. I say we pull them out and vote. Carl raised a fist in agreement, and even Martin was nodding. But Pascal was undeterred. This is a monarchy, people. My job is to attend to your best interests, whether you like it or not. I've trained for it, literally, since before I was born. That's the whole point of monarchy. You people are not qualified to vote, and you are. Conram said, crossing his arms. Shut up, Bluntfuck, Ho said menacingly. It's all right, the prince told him. He needs to hear this. Yes, Conram, I'm qualified to make your decisions. It's my solemn duty. It's what I'm trained for. But it was Conram's turn to press the point. You're a figurehead, Pascal. Less than that. You're the child of figureheads. Your solemn duty is to throw the first pitch at ball games and, you know, cut ribbons and stuff. Pascal laughed. You can't actually believe that, Boyle. When was the last time a royal decree was disobeyed? When was the last no-confidence vote in the Senate? The people of Earth were tired of responsibility. They forced it on my parents, and wouldn't take it back now even if they could, which they can't. Conrad demanded, which they can't, Pascal agreed. Look, if nothing else, I'm the third richest human who ever lived. I could buy whole cities with my weekly allowance, and that gives you the right to commit murder. The prince balled his fist again, then sighed and released it. Call it what you like. Single murder, even premeditated, is a property crime in that queendom of Immorbids. You have some very Puritan ideals, Conrad, but if I paid you enough, you'd gladly die 100 times, 1,000, for that matter. I could buy your right arm, chop it off and amend your genome, so the fax filters would know not to grow it back. Enough money and you'd be the one asking me. I'm not for sale, Conrad said, wondering suddenly if that were true. And fearing that it wasn't. Is that what you're offering? Shmari asked, suddenly intrigued as well as angry. Bribes for our cooperation? No, Pascal said. Absolutely, no, you should never mix business and friendship. It's bad for both. Buying people is one of the easiest ways to destroy them. I used to burn my tutors that way. Ruin their lives, until my parents finally put a stop to it. And it wasn't fun or good. I think they wanted me to have that lesson. Money as a weapon. As a tool of despair. My father's early work sent shockwaves through the entire economy. You wouldn't believe how careful he is today. I know you think I'm callous. But I haven't even opened my wallet. And I don't need to. Never mind the force I can bring to bear. This voyage is a major historical event, like the Boston Tea Party or the Air Tax Rebellion. And when it's all over, these boys will be proud they played a part. You're crazy, Conrad said simply. Am I? Either that, or you're evil. Wake these boys up, if you're so sure they'll agree with you. Oh, they probably won't, Pascal conceded. Not now. Not until later. But when we've succeeded, and we're famous and the envy of all, they're going to want their share of the glory. That's the whole point. Okay, so reasoning with Pascal had failed. Again, and there wouldn't be time or space or opportunity for another mutiny. And Conrad was probably about 3 seconds from being silenced again, or murdered outright in the fax. Not knowing what else to do, he put his hands together and pleaded, Pascal, listen. Please, give the distress call. If one person disagrees with you, our reputations will be permanently blackened. Nobody likes a murderer. And killing someone who might press charges, Pascal seemed amused. If you feel that strongly about it, Boyle, maybe you should volunteer. Kill yourself to save someone else. All right, I will. Conrad snapped. The words were out of his mouth before he could stop them. Really? Pascal was intrigued. Are you sure? Yes, Conrad said, after slightly longer reflection. The idea sickened him, terrified him. No more self, no more experience, no more life. Just some look-alike, some think-alike that believed it was Conrad Mursk, but had no idea what had really happened here on Viridi. Pascal might be right. The old Conrad would probably happily swallow any story the poet prince served up. But what else could he do? Hadn't he sold out enough to these mad schemes, these daydreams of revolution? Weren't there enough sins on his head already? Sin. There was a concept his parents had beaten him with until it lost all meaning. It had rarely troubled him before, but on his mission and especially now the prospect loomed large. It wasn't God that concerned him, so much as his own immortal conscience, to live forever in the Queendom, knowing he'd done such a shitty thing. Knowing he could have prevented it from happening, made sure there was a little less fear and pain and emptiness in the universe. Could he live like that? Would he die now to prevent it? More to the point, would he sacrifice his entire experience of Shamari? His recovered self, cleansed of sin, would never even know what it lost, what it lacked. Such a waste. But if he couldn't live up to his own standards, much less hers, then this foolish and consummated passion meant nothing. The fires of youth were betrayed either way. Yes, he said again. I volunteer. My conscience requires it. If you're going to erase someone, erase me. Fucker. Bascal was quiet for several seconds. He licked his lips. Well, is this the same mister? Impulsive I went to camp with. Conrad didn't feel like answering that. Didn't feel much like talking at all anymore. I'm impressed, Bascal said seriously. It's quite a gesture. He looked around the room. Anyone else? Slowly, reluctantly, Shmari put her hand up. For the revolution, she said lamely, not for you. It's a stronger statement than drawing straws. Bascal took that in as well, looking even more surprised. And more so still when Carl raised his hand as well, actually lowered it. Since Carl was hanging upside down at the time, with his feet propped against the wall. And then Steve Grush raised a hand. Me too, sire. This may be my only chance to do something useful. Ever. Wow, Conrad said, genuinely shocked. Ho and Martin looked uncomfortable, and sat very still to avoid any inadvertent, volunteer-like movements. My friends, in your valor my courage is quickened, the poet prince mused, though I make my way through the icy gulfs of Hans itself. He pinched his chin, as if feeling therefore his father's beard, his father's wisdom and distracted brilliance. You're brave people, I love that. I love you. I'd volunteer myself, but of course the revolution needs its figurehead. He licked his lips again, and a look of surprising uncertainty passed across his features. It's time for hard choices. Steve, your request is accepted. Guard, please throw him in the fax. This was done, with little fanfare, although Steve couldn't suppress a slight squawk at the end. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, and God have mercy on us all, the prince said, looking at the print plate the blank space where Steve had been. Sleep, my friend, and dream of freedom. His gaze lingered there for a while he dug at his chin with an index finger. Then, abruptly, he snapped out of it and was surveying the room with clear eyes. The rest of you are too valuable. Get sweeped up for the crash. No, Conrad said. I won't. I refuse.